welcome to the Chelsea Skidmore Show. I'm here today with writer Cody Heller. Cody is in her home. She is location scouting with her laptop.
I'm experimenting. Ooh. I'm experimenting because, well, we're walking down a hallway right now.
And you just moved into a new home, right?
About a year, a little over a year ago. Yes. And so it's all about finding, you know, the locations where I shine, where I really, this is not a good one. Wait, hold on. Let me try turning on some lights.
That's pitch black. That's good.
Hold on. What do we think about this? I mean, now it's just really white and boring, but is it better?
I like this. No, this is the best well lit for sure.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. It's funny that...
Okay, good, and I'm on a bed.
Wait, it's so funny, too, that Anna Kendrick played you, because now I actually see that you sound and look alike, and I never noticed that before.
Really? We always joke that it's, like, our tiny foreheads and thin lips are, like, our main things that make us look alike. So, like, us and Kate Mara, we feel like, is our third, like, doppelganger.
Are you watching The Teacher? Or a teacher?
Hell yeah. But I'm one episode behind, though. So no spoilers.
I won't give a spoil. I love it.
I mean, I'm definitely gonna keep watching. Like, I'm definitely into it. I just started the newest episode, like, when they're in the hot tub for the vacation.
I loved that house. I want to go to a house.
I'm like, what the fuck? Oh, I love that house. Amazing. But I'm like, what the fuck are you doing, girl? You took him on a vacation. I feel like I missed something. I feel like I missed a beat. Maybe I missed an episode where, like, suddenly that sort of thing is, like, just a thing that they would do where, like, right before it's like, dude. And the only thing that they do to make us know that there's still danger is, like, delete the video. I'm like, no, what are you doing? It is... But I'm so into it.
Yeah, they
could not be more into. Yeah,
they jumped into time for sure with no explanation. I think it's just like we're picking up a couple, like a month or two down the road.
I'm interested. It's based on a movie.
Yes, which I want to see.
The same writer director. I know. Now I want to watch the movie because I'm very curious. Like what? Because I have some friends saying like they love the movie and they're not as into the show. So I'm now very curious.
Yeah, all of my girlfriends love it. It's like, it's I'm like trying to be careful with how I say it because of course you know how I talk about the show because I personally always had like a teacher student fantasy, but like the other way around.
Sure. Like but the other way. Yeah, the other way. Oh, obviously. I think that's why it's so appealing to women right now, especially it's because, it's usually the submissive, like it's typically the other way around and changing the gender suddenly makes it where it's like, a woman can be a predator too, like equality, you know? And I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm all for it. Even though obviously it's, you know, fucked up, but like I got into a little bit of trouble, not trouble, but like I have a joke in Dummy, my show that was on Quibi, which is RIP, no longer with us. But I had like a reverse gender kind of pedophilia joke that some people on Twitter were like really like offended by. And I was like, I mean, to me, the joke is that like you see this a million times the other way around gender wise. But like, why can't we see it where it's a young guy and an older woman?
Yeah. When you turn
still making fun of it.
When you turned that in, did they say anything to you about it? Or were you like pretty open to and free to do what you wanted?
It was
creatively.
It was definitely, no, Quibi was so, so cool about like letting me do my thing. But there were a couple people along the way who read it and like, were like, are you sure you really want to do this joke? And I was like, yes, I do. I think it's really funny. And it's also there's a main character, Anna, who's playing me, and there's a sex doll who's kind of like her id. It's like her inner voice. And so Anna is grossed out. Cody, the character, is grossed out by this. It's the sex doll who has a crush on him. And because the sex doll has been manufactured 7 years ago, she says she's seven. So in her mind, she's like, he's twice my age because he's like a 14-year-old boy. And she's like, you like older guys too, Cody. Like, get off my back. So the joke to me is that like you could only get away with this joke because you're dealing with a sex doll who is 7 years old. And, you know, that's why I think it's funny. And so I fought for it. And
totally.
But Quibi never had a problem with it. But a couple of people along the way like mentioned, like, are you sure it's really like, this is a real, you know, and this is kind of you know, I originally wrote a bulk of the show that wound up getting made, but I originally wrote it before Trump was elected. So before mm-hmm. Me Too. And so it was a little bit of a kind of thing where it was like, once Me Too was happening and all this stuff, it was like more of a, oh, are you going to get canceled by this? And I was like, I stand behind this joke. I am super supportive of all of this stuff. But at a certain point, like, I need to decide where my morals lie and what mm-hmm. I think is a joke and what I think is offensive.
I'm glad that you did it. Because, yeah, I mean, obviously comedians deal with that too. And I miss how, of course, it's important for us to adjust when necessary. And it's great to learn new information if there's like an issue. But it's so hard, that line with like comedy and inappropriate and offensive and non-PC. Before that, though, like, those are all of my favorite movies. Like, movies like Happiness.
Well, look, I mean,
have you seen Happiness?
I mean, everything. Yes.
Like oh, shit yeah. like that. Oh, yeah. Like, I don't see enough stuff like that anymore. And that's the stuff I love, you know?
I know. I think, you know, especially with comedy never ages well, because we're constantly evolving as a culture and changing the way that what things are acceptable and what things aren't. And so it is a really interesting, like, time to be a creative person in general. And like, you know, Dan, my fiance, had like a whole controversy because he made this video like 10 plus years ago and took it down because he realized it was like already offensive back then, but it got resurfaced during like QAnon, like people wanted to find shit on people that were anti-Trump. And so this video, it's a Dexter parody, and it involves like a guy who goes back in time and rapes the babies of people that are going to grow up to be serial killers.
Yeah.
And it's like a comedy. It was in poor taste. There's a shot literally of him like simulating sex with a fake baby, like a doll. Yeah. And it caused this huge thing and became like, oh, Dan Harmon is a pedophile, this huge mm-hmm. crazy thing. And it's like, you know, he even months later was like, this maybe crosses the line and isn't that funny. But like, now it's suddenly become this huge thing of like, how you're, because you made this, therefore you are in real life a pedophile. And it's just so insane to watch this, you know, what the internet was meant to bring everyone together. Mm-hmm. And it did that for a minute. And then it suddenly became the thing that has been tearing everybody apart and just become the way that like, really fucked up people who used to be ashamed of their racism now find other people who think like them and now are bolstered by that. And has, I mean, I'm, yeah, it's a scary time. And I'm so curious to see what will ultimately happen with like how we as human beings will evolve with the technology and eventually just become robots. Probably.
Nothing will be funny anymore. You know, yeah. like every until yeah. everything is eventually off limits. No, I think, I think that, you know, I hope it works itself out and that people chill out a little more and it like goes
it
in a
will.
Way.
I think, you know,
out.
I think the pendulum had to swing way the other way because we were so far on the offensive. There's so many things and, you know, it's natural that we had to kind of go all the way to the other extreme to just be super sensitive and like listen to what everyone is saying that they're offended by and be like, let's change the way we do things. And ultimately for like the film and TV industry, it's all about representation and not just on screen, but like behind the scenes. And now I think we're finally realizing like, oh, if white men are telling every story, of course there is not going to be, you know, we're not going to be making stuff that appeals to everyone else really. And we're all going to just evolve to think that this is the be all everything of like the white male gaze. And that's why I think also, we have so many body issues as women is because the stuff we watch growing up, the sex scenes we saw were all the very much the same thing of like a singular white male gaze image of like what they want women to look like. And they all look pretty much within the same standard of beauty that now we're all striving for because we internalize it as kids. And now even the Disney characters, like they all look fucking Barbie dolls, everything. Mm-hmm. And so I think that I hope what comes of all of this stuff is a big change in that. Like, I know that the humor stuff will work itself out, but I really do hope that we are moving in the direction of like, let's change what normal is and realize there is no normal. There is no ideal. There's a bunch of beautiful can look a million different ways. Sexy can look a million different ways. Yeah, I don't know. I'm rambling.
No,
I've been following a lot of like body. I've been following a lot of body pop, like a plus size in quotes models on Instagram that are, you know, beautiful women with real curves. And I think to myself, if I as a teenager were able to see this instead of just like, you know, 17 magazine and Cosmo and all the ones where everyone looked the same, I think I would have a lot less like body image issues and eating issues and all of the stuff that I think most women deal with. Mm-hmm. I would have so much less of that because I'd be like, oh, you can be beautiful and look like that. That's great. Mm-hmm. I don't have to strive for this one specific thing that's not who I am and is such a fucking waste of time.
Totally. Yeah, I definitely have seen like a big change even like on websites, like in terms of having more plus size models and stuff, yeah. Which is great to see too, because I know that, you know, in the past, I'm sure girls went on the site and who were, plus size and were curious about how the stuff would even look on them. I mean, it's totally. Like hard to even see.
Well, I think it used to be like plus size, meaning like not even like what we consider plus, you know. I just think that in itself is crazy because like the plus size models that I follow are still like a size 6 or 8. It's, you know what I mean? But now I think before it used to be like they couldn't even fit into the normal stuff. So they would have to shop at a different type. It was like there were stores specifically for, and now it's like, no, lines like Reformation and, what's Rihanna's line, like they are now catering to like from the smallest to the biggest, like all the sizes, which is just that inclusivity makes such a big difference and is so like necessary, especially knowing like we live in America, like a large number of our population is, overweight. Yeah. And I'm not saying that in a pejorative way. Like that's the truth and that and there's nothing wrong with that. That's just how it is. So yeah, I'm totally for all of that. And I feel like for the younger generations, it can make such a significant difference on their self-esteem and how they see themselves in the world and what they want doing with their lives, because it can just transform everything.
Mm-hmm. And even like,
when it comes down to it, yeah. No, go ahead.
No, just like models like Ashley Graham, like getting a bigger, like more work, you know, I know that like a lot of brands didn't even have like plus size women on the runway and stuff. And now they've opened that up so much. So it's definitely like made progress. And of course, like.
Yeah. And I also follow a lot of Instagram accounts of people with disabilities that and are advocating for like more representation in that. We're like, why can't? Yes, there are now some models who, you know, are amputees and different disabilities in wheelchairs. So it's like, this is necessary. Representation is so important. Think back to as you're a kid and you're watching TV and movies, how much that impacts you, how much that informs your like point of view and you as a person. And if you don't see yourself reflected back and you're forced to put yourself in the shoes of a white male protagonist or a female protagonist that looks like a supermodel and has one line, what is that? How detrimental that really is, because as children, oftentimes it shapes your world in a huge way.
Mm-hmm. So with your show Dummy that you made, wasn't the protagonist like a feminist character? And didn't you bring a lot of that into the show?
So in Dummy, it's kind of, you know, it's a comedy. And so I think of it a little bit like, she's a little bit like Cher from Clueless in that like she really like it, like the scene in where she's like talking about, you know, saving the after like the Pismo Beach disaster. And it's basically Cody and Barbara think of themselves as feminists, want to be good feminists, but they're really dumb when it comes down to it. Like Dummy, the title relatable to the two of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're, you know, they're like, Barbara will oftentimes like try to make some big inspirational speech and be like, I mean, do you think that like when Roe was like facing off Wade, do you think that they just gave it all up? Like she'll totally just fuck up. She'll be like, you know, when Susan B. Anthony was fighting for the right to bear arms, do you think that she would have just given it up for a man? Like they're just, she's constantly getting the facts wrong and just being a bad feminist, but so it is poking fun at white feminine feminism specifically, I would say.
Yeah, there's so much. I mean, honestly, like, I'm all for women's rights, but there's so much that I don't know. So I feel like a dummy myself, honestly, you know, when it comes to a lot of that stuff.
That's completely, that's how I feel. And I, do you know what the Bechdel test is?
No. Oh, is it okay, the Okay, no. Is there another test similar? I want to say bechamel, I know that's a sauce.
But the bechamel test. How creamy is it when you bite into it? Okay, no. So the Bechdel test is this thing that Alison Bechdel was a cartoonist, and she came up with this thing that's like in cartoon form, I think originally. Here I am, like, I did a whole episode about it. I still don't even know. But it's basically a way, it's a way to rate movies, TV, any sort of art, how good it is dealing with the female characters. So in order to pass the Bechdel test, a movie has to have one, the first thing is at least two female characters. Two, they have to talk to each other, not just talk to the men. They have to have a scene where they talk to each other about something other than a man. The other part is they have to have names, but that's like kind of a rule, whatever. Yeah. So anyway, but it's just that they have to. So the movie, The Woman, for example, this 1930s classic movie with Rosalind Russell, and I forget all the, you know, this famous movie. It is all women in the movie, but that movie ironically doesn't pass the Bechdel test because all they talk about is men for the entire movie, which is just funny, but it's obviously. So I have an episode of Dummy called The Bechdel Test where the two characters, they're gonna be writers together. So they're realizing that they have only ever talked about Dan, the guy that Cody is dating and the sex doll belongs to. And so they're on a road trip and they decide, let's that pass the Bechdel test. So all we have to do is just not talk about men. And then it's just like, they have nothing. They realize they have nothing to talk about and they can't figure out. Every time they start talking about something, it turns out to be like, they'll be like, oh, can you, they'll see a bumper sticker on a car and they'll be like, oh, can you believe that like 53% of women hated themselves enough to vote for that? You know, it's like Trump bumper sticker. And the other girl's like, you failed. Like you started talking about a man. So anyway, the whole episode, they're trying to not talk about men. And they're like, why is it so hard to talk about anything other than a man? And then they finally talk shit about another woman and they realize, wait, we just passed the Bechdel test. All we had to do was like talk shit about another woman. And now we can go back to talking about guys all day. And so it's like, you know, this very, looking at it in this way where it's like, that doesn't seem very Bechdel-y that like you could talk shit about another woman. That seems like not feminist, right? But so I like exploring all of the hypocrisy that I feel internally where I'm like, I want to be body positive. I want to be all these things. Why do I still go and get lasers on my face at the dermatologist? Why do I still feel like I have to limit my calories and workout and all these things that have to do with vanity? If I really want to be a good feminist, shouldn't that shit not matter? But it's so much more complex than that. So I like to explore those issues. And I feel like that Dummy was a playground of me because one of them is a sex doll. It was a playground for me to really explore all the ins and outs of what it is to be a modern woman and all the conflicting thoughts that we have. Like another example that this like happened in real life, actually. So right before the Me Too movement, like right before Harvey Weinstein, like a month before, I get a call from one of my agents and he's like, so I have like two male agents that were like my main agents. And I get a call from one of the agents and he's like, hey, Cody, like I have to talk to you about something. It's a little weird. Like, just prepare yourself. And I was like, oh my God, am I getting dropped as a client? Like, what? All these thoughts from my head. And he's like, so-and-so, the other agent was fired for sexual harassment. And I was like, oh my God. And I was so shocked. But the first thing that popped into my head was like, he never hit on me. Like, am I too ugly for him? Like, what? Like, I was like, if he got fired for that, there were multiple women coming out and saying that. And I was like, that thought that popped into my head, and I was like, that is so fucked up. That is such a fucked up thought. Those poor women, the victims, like all of that stuff. And both things can be true. And totally. So I, you know, I'm all about exploring all that darkness that exists within my brain where I'm like, that's a horrible, terrible feminist thing to think, but I'm still thinking it and it's still there. So I have to acknowledge it because
I think,
you know, sunlight is the best disinfectant for the shame.
I think it means you had talent.
That's but the, it, like I wound up using it in Dummy as a joke, and she's like, maybe it's just because, you know, he saw me as like, I have so much talent and I'm his client. And Barbara's like, yeah, sure, keep telling yourself that.
Yeah.
I
totally get it.
Yeah. But speaking of skincare, yes. Kind of, yes. I want to find out because I love that you post so openly about your Botox. I want to know your whole thing. Where in your face do you get it? What do you get? And how often do you do it? And just, I want to hear your whole Botox/filler story.
Okay. So, for me, I have a very expressive forehead and I like to use it, you know? But I don't like the fine lines that I get. So where I get Botox is on my, I don't watch everywhere, but I know it's on my forehead. I don't get it around the eye area because I don't have crow's feet yet. I've gotten Botox. They'll do like 2 shots in my chin because,
for what? What does that do?
Because it like wrinkles or not wrinkles, but like it will get dots in it. Like, if I go like that, like it will get like all these little
interesting
dots sometimes.
Okay. Do you do smile lines?
I just did for the first time.
You did? Because here's my whole thing. The only Botox I get is from
but that was
a neurologist.
Filler.
I get it for, the ones in the
smile line was filler.
Can you tell me more about that? What is filler? Like hyaluronic acid or something? Like Juvederm?
Yes, it was Juvederm there. Okay. Were you going to
say? And how many do they do?
I don't know. It was a small amount because it was my first time. And I was concerned about it changing my face. Because
that's why I'm worried.
Changes your face, you know?
It does change your face. Yeah.
And the sick thing is,
I mean, no, I'm not saying that to you. By the way, yes, I wasn't saying that to you. Look different.
In general,
I was just saying
it does. And most of the time, you know, if you're lucky, it makes you look good and refreshed and young and like plump and youthful. And like someone will be like, oh my God, you look so good. And they won't even know what you did. That's getting good work done. I keep it super.
Do you ever do lasers at all or like thermage or anything like that?
I don't have much experience. I did V-beam because I did V-beam 4 times in preparation for my wedding because I get bad rosacea in my T-zone area. So like...
I do V-beam for my cheeks. Yeah.
Yeah. And I can't tell if it worked.
Really?
I think it decreased it a little, but it's not like it wiped because I still have to wear concealer every day on my chin.
Interesting.
It didn't completely erase it.
You know, I wonder if you should try the Clear and Brilliant laser. I really like that one.
Which I want to. Which ones have you done?
I really like that. So I've done V-beam and I've done Clear and Brilliant and I've done Genesis and then I've done Thermage, which is different than a laser. It's like it fucking really hurts. Like I have a pretty high tolerance for pain, but this shit hurts so much. But they have to put like a grounding, a pad on your back that like grounds you because it's electric, like shock on your face. So they put a grid, tattoo grid all along your face. I got my neck as well because I'm starting to get tech neck. Have you heard
tech
the term
neck?
Tech neck?
No, what is tech it's, neck?
Yeah, like from looking like tech, like from looking down at your phone. Tech neck.
No one knows what this shit is where I'm from. I mean, I'm from New York, but it's just so LA tech neck.
It's so LA.
But I can see it, yeah.
The thermage is really effective, but it hurts a lot. But the last time I went, my dermatologist, I was on my period and I was like, fuck, dude, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this. Like, you know, your pain gets more intense during your period. So he was like, all right, you know, I forgot to tell you, we just got in a nitrous mission, you know, like a laughing gas. And I was like, Yes, please. And then I had the most joyful hour of my life getting this. I mean, it still hurt. You still felt it every time it zapped you, but you didn't care because you're on fucking nitrous. And at one point I was so high, and like my dermatologist, I've been going to him for years. We're like friends. He's the best. And so I'm doing the laughing gas, and I'm like, there's, you know, music playing in the background, like of The Office. And I'm like, oh my God, that's the new Fiona Apple. I love it so much. It's so good. And my doctor was like, Cody, this is a man singing. And I was like, what? No, this is the new Fiona Apple. And he was like, I'm telling you it's not. And I was like, hold on. And I Shazammed it. And it was like just some random like country song by a dude. But I was so fucked up that I heard it as like Shamika or something in my head. It was joyous. It was a great experience.
That's so funny, because I was about to say, what a cool office between the nitrous and the Fiona Apple. I have to go to your guy. I have to go to him, because the fact
he's great. I'll send you his info. But he is very conservative. And for me, like I was starting to notice these lines, these smile lines. And I was like, what do we do? Do we do Botox? What do we do for that? And he was like, not for that, because it can really make your face look weird and you don't need that. So we're going to do the Thermage. And the Thermage is basically you do it, and for the next 6 months, you continue to see like lifting effects.
Ooh.
So it's like for fine lines. So we'll see. I mean, I feel like they're not that noticeable.
Your skin is incredible. And I know that you have fair skin. So like, I think fair skin already doesn't look like there's pores really, but your skin just looks so smooth.
Well, that's really, I mean, I am wearing a little bit of like, concealer, but it's incredible. Right now,
you don't have, and it's,
you're
it's
so kind, but it's literally all the, I love these fucking lasers, man. And they're expensive. Like they're fucking expensive. And I don't know how it compares to Botox, because the only Botox I do is for migraines. And so insurance covers mine, but it does make, when they do the Botox migraine, they do it in your forehead as well. So like, I don't have forehead wrinkles because of it, but I also, the first time I did it, I was like, I don't like, it feels like I can't express myself. I could feel it feeling like frozen. So from then on, she did it a little bit higher up so that I would have more movement, like more movement around my brows.
Yeah, I asked.
Okay, wait, another question.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Sorry, another question. Lips. I know that you did experiment with the filler in the lips. Have you continued?
I have. It melts so fucking fast on me, but I love it, because I have been insecure about my lips my entire life.
Been insecure.
Really?
I've been insecure about my thin lips my entire life. And I did it once. My lips, I'm wearing a little color, so it makes it better, but like, they're not bad, but they're not, you know, they're thinnish. Anyway, so one time I did it, and I did it not with my derm, who would, I'm sure, have done a way better job. I did it at like a med spa when I was also getting like my pussy lasered or whatever. And I was like,
you have to be careful.
I was just feeling crazy. So I did it, and I loved how I looked. I was like, at first, I was like, oh my God, I just did the top lip, not the bottom, just a tiny bit. And at first I was like, oh my God, I'm going to do this for the rest of my life. I look amazing.
Yeah.
And then I started to notice, like I was so self-aware of it feeling like it was pushed out. And I could feel when I ran my tongue over my lip, I could feel the little bumps kind of.
I feel them right
and
now.
And then I gave a blowjob, and I remember feeling I was so self-aware of the little lumps that it took me out of this like sexual experience. And I was like, I don't think I can ever do my lips again. It felt so, I was so self-aware of it. I was so like self-conscious about it, even though I wasn't ashamed to say I had done it or anything like that. It just wasn't for me. And then I started dating my now fiance, like at the tail end of when it was like going away. And later, like, and I didn't say anything, it didn't come up, but later on I was like, oh, I think I'm going to get some lip, you know, filler or whatever. And he was like, wait, he had noticed when I had it at the beginning, and he didn't like he could tell that it was like not natural. And he was like, he was like, obviously you can do whatever you want. I would never tell you, but I just, so you know, like, I like it how your lips are normally. And so then I was like, well, now if I get it, I'm doubly self-conscious about it. And I could always just feel it jutting out. Like it would just feel like, I don't know. Should I do it again though? I'm so bored.
Well, it's, I know. Like for me, like I,
how often do you do it?
So I probably, because
yours looks really
I just did it. I did it,
but it looks really natural. Let me see from the side.
I get half.
And you do
I get
upper and lower.
Yeah, I get half the amount that my friends do. I get half a syringe.
I asked the dude who did it. I asked him to do so little that like only I would notice it. And literally, like Nicole Schreiber was my roommate at the time. She didn't notice it till I told her. Like it was that minimal. Mm-hmm. But then once I told her, and my mom, same. Like they both didn't notice until I told them. And then they were like, oh yeah. And they could tell. And it just didn't look natural on me. Like on you, it looks very natural.
Thank you.
It looks really good.
The first time I got it done, I went to Epione, Simon Arondi, who is the guy who did Kylie's lips. And he put way too much in my lips. And I looked.
Oh my God.
I liked it, but they were really, really massive. And they looked fake. And everyone knew. And, you know, I've since gone to different people. It was also like way too expensive. He like really overcharges.
Questions, follow up. How often do you do it and how much is it for the lips?
So typically, okay. So one syringe is $700 and they put half a syringe in my lips. When I went to the Simon Arondi guy, he just charged per area and it was $1,700. And I didn't realize it was going to be that much. And they kind of
$1,700 for your, your whole face though.
Just for the lips. I never went back.
No,
it was like,
that is fraud. That is fucking robbery.
It felt like a bait. It felt like a bait and switch. They weren't like clear with me. Like I had to take money out of my savings. Like it was kind of like, I had the
that
money,
is so
but
fucked.
I would have never spent that, you know, I would have never ever done that if I knew.
Okay. So now you do, it's $350.
Yeah. But then, right? You know, and then we put syringe. The rest here, on the side.
Okay.
Try that.
Okay.
Yeah. I've done under my eyes in the past.
How often?
Oh,
how often?
Once or twice a year. If I could like afford to, I would probably do it frequently, but sometimes I try to stay really conservative because I do have an addictive personality, you know, I'm an addict and I really like love it. And like, it's so easy once you're in there to want to just start filling other areas.
And just be, yeah, of course. Yeah.
And every time I've gone, I've like almost not every time, but like, I want to try a new area. Like I didn't go there for the side, but once I was there,
and then you're like, well,
exactly. And that's scary to me. And I think lasers is great because like, you know, you always hear, people talking about how lasers is like such a great alternative and it's just like better than filler. And,
and it's like preventative, like it helps to,
Now you found
I'm,
now you really now found like, the lighting. Now you really found the lighting.
if you're gonna use like a thumbnail for this episode, I think this would be maybe a good.
Did you hear that?
What was that?
I screenshot it. Hold on, I'm gonna do it again.
Yes, girl.
Wait, we both tilted our heads.
Oh,
wait,
God.
I want to ask you about you proposing because I actually don't know any other girls who have proposed. And I think that's very exciting.
Really?
No, I don't. I love it.
I actually don't. I don't know any in person. I feel like I met someone recently who did, but now I can't remember who it was. But I basically, marriage has never been like an important thing to me. Like I've never been like a dream wedding kind of girl. Mm-hmm. I still don't know if I want kids or not. Like I'm pretty sure I do, but I kind of like vacillate between being like, yeah, I want them. And then like, no, I don't think I want them. And so I'm undecided in that arena, but with weddings, it was never the kind of thing where I was like, I dream of being a bride in a big, beautiful white dress and having this big wedding. And I think part of that is that like, I have come divorced family and like, you know, they're fine. And actually recently my mom and dad have been getting along the best that they have in like 20 years. So now I'm actually excited, but like, I think a big part of me not craving this big wedding was because I knew that like it would be just like awkward, like my bat mitzvah was, where like there's half the family and half the family and it's like weird still. So that was never like top of mind for me. And then I started dating Dan like 5 years ago, and we immediately, you know, we had, I knew that he was my forever person or whatever lame thing you want to say, but like he was my partner and I knew we were going to be together. But he had just literally, when we started dating, he was 1 month out of a marriage that only lasted 1 year. And he had this huge wedding. And so I think maybe that affected also me just being like, I don't know if I ever want a wedding, but if I do have one, I just want it to be a super small, intimate, like backyard, family, close friends. Anyway, it was never, it wasn't the kind of thing that we like talked about very much, but like I assumed we're going to be together. If we have to do it for like legal reasons or whatever, we will, but whatever. Then a couple years ago, one of my best friends got engaged. Her husband proposed to her, but they took her last name. And I thought that was really cool because I was like, yeah, duh. Of course we're living in a patriarchy. We still, if, like more common than not, like 95% of the time, women are absorbed by the men that they married, like in name. They take their last name. They lose their identity. And, you know, it just, it was interesting thinking about that. And I was like, that's so cool. My friend Sophia, with her and her husband taking her last name. And so Dan and I started talking about that. And I was like, would you do that? Would you like take, would you be Dan Heller? And he was like, yeah, I think that would be really cool. Like he was joking around about like, because now his search history is like, because of the QAnon thing, like the baby fucking video. He was like, I would love to have a new name when you Google me. And so we were like kind of just joking about it. And he's like, obviously you would have to like propose if, you know, like do it properly. And I was like, of course, yeah. Like if I'm going to do it, we're going to do it.
So wait, hold on. Wait. So he immediately said the idea of him taking your last name would mean that you would be the one to propose.
Yeah, because like we were kind of switching the gender roles. Oh, like, typically okay. Typically the man proposes and then the woman takes his last name.
I get
so
it.
So he was like, you know, if we're gonna flip it, like let's do it. You would have to propose to me. And I was like, obviously, yeah, like of course. And we were just joking around. It wasn't like a serious conversation, but it wasn't like a high pressure conversation. It was kind of in passing, whatever, drunken with friends, and we were just like joking around. And then, you know, the idea was like percolating and I was like thinking about it. And this was like already 2 years ago now because of COVID. We like we were going to get married this year, but we haven't done it yet because of COVID. But so it was like December of 2018. And I was drunk with my friend Sophia, who was the one that, you know, her husband took her last name. And we were drunk at a bar. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to look on Kay's Jewelers. Cause like, if I'm going to propose, Dan and I were going to Tahiti for the holidays. And I was like, maybe I'll do it over the holidays. And you know, I'll get him a ring. And I was like, what kind of ring? And I was researching and, you know, a lot for like gay men that are getting rings, it's a lot like blingy kind of stuff. And I was like, that's not Dan. It has to be like, I was trying to decide because I wanted it to be different from a wedding band. Mm-hmm. Like I want it to be an engagement ring. So what I landed on, I bought from Kay's Jewelers at like 1:30 in the morning at the drawing room, like drunk off my ass, I ordered it online. I mean, I like on my phone. And it's just a gold band, but it has engraved on it, Dan Heller. And so we went on the trip to Tahiti. He had no idea. And we were staying in, like, it's so fucking privileged. I like saying it out loud. I'm like, I'm such an asshole. But we were staying in one of those like amazing, like over the water,
beautiful
like, things where you, you have one of those at the end of the bed, you have a little like window, the glass thing. So you can see the fish below and the water is like so clear that you can see everything. You see like stingrays going through and you can lift up this little thing and like put fish food down and then close it. So anyway, like late at night, I would just spend the whole night like on the edge of the bed, like looking down and watching the fish. And you can like turn the light on and whatever. It was the dreamiest, most heavenly place I've ever been. But anyway, so I was like, oh, if I put my phone on top of the glass, I can like have an over the head shot and, you know, of the two of us. And then I can like, I was planning this like location scouting and I was like testing it and doing like, I did like a test where it's me going down there. So I set the camera up, I started recording it. And then I was like, Dan, come swimming with me. And he was like, I just went swimming. Like, no, he's like, not. It was, oh, I was already like, fuck, I don't want to fuck this up. I want it to be a surprise. So I finally like got him to go down. I was like, come over this way.
Were you nervous? Here.
And I was just like, I was excited. I wasn't really nervous because I knew there was no way he was going to say no. And so I was more nervous about like, I wanted to pull off the surprise of it good and like make it, I wanted him to genuinely like be surprised and see what it, how, like what his emotions were. So I got him, like, I was like making sure we were under the camera because I wanted to have it on, on video. And so then, and we're like, it's like really shallow water. And so I had practiced like, and I knew what time of day the tide was low enough that if I got down on my knee, I wouldn't like have water over my head. So I had it in my back of my bathing suit, just in a little box. And I got him under there. And then I was like, I want to talk to you, come here. And then like, I set him up where I knew the camera was. And then I was like, I got down on one knee and I was like, Dan, will you marry me? And he was like, yes. And he was so surprised. And I put the ring on and it was a little snug because the way that I knew his ring size was I took his old wedding ring that he still had and I got it measured and I got that size. But I think he had gained like a little bit of weight. So it was just a little bit tight. So when we got back to the States, I had to have it loosened. But it still fit and it's said Dan Heller and it was very cathartic and beautiful and sweet and felt really, it was just exactly how I wanted it to go. It was just like magical. And then I have the whole thing on video and it's so funny because you can like see just how surprised, how shocked he is. He did not see it coming at all.
It's such an incredible shot too, from like the overhead, the bird's eye view. And it was so beautiful. I remember I saw the video on Instagram and Chelsea. Like, I love proposal videos. I used to watch them on YouTube and like cry. This is before.
Really? I mean, I've never so got, cute. I hate the ones that are too involved that like make the world a part of it, like the performative ones, because I'm always like, I always feel like a slight nausea because I'm like, well, obviously if they have to say yes because they're pressured into it. Whereas like with this, if he said no, like it's not like there's a group of people waiting to play like
mariachi the flash music. Dance. Like, it was, no, they all play that one Marry Me song. From that guy.
Yes.
I forgot his name. The guy who wears the hat.
Oh my God. Yeah. Oh,
that's
what is
so
it?
Funny.
Is it? But anyway, so it went according to the plan. It was perfect. And now we're engaged and we're going to have a small wedding once the vaccine is here and he's going to become Dan Heller.
Yay.
And we joke a lot about like the old, like Dan Harmon versus Dan Heller and like his, you know, the differences. He's like, well, Dan Heller wouldn't do that. So, and it's very sweet. And,
that's so cute. I'm so happy for you. Congrats.
Wait. And so thank you. I want to hear, cause I know bits and pieces just because like I've known you kind of, you know, socially like here and there through Nicole. So I know you are your husband, you guys were best friends for years and not romantic. And then now you're madly in love and married and have the most amazing, you're the most gorgeous couple I've ever seen in my life. It's like silly. And that you're both hilarious on
top
of it. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So what was the transition and how did it work?
Okay, so I don't like to be the kind of girl who was like, he was in love with me, but he was.
But
you know,
he was.
That's how he says it.
I mean, look at you.
But it's funny because it's like so we were best friends for 3 years and we had both dated other people during that time. But everyone would always say, Steven's in love with you. Steven's in love with you. And I was like, no, he's not. And I truly like didn't see it. Like, I don't know. I just. Like,
really? Are you sure you weren't just like. Like you were just like being like
I'm not
humble
one of those,
in a way.
I'm not one of those girls who like flatters herself with that kind of thing when they're like, he's obsessed. Like, I don't know. I'm always the last one to know for some reason.
I feel like, and I could be wrong, but I feel like with someone who is as strikingly beautiful as you, you're so used to having multiple people like, at least in lust with you at all times, that you're probably like unfazed by it in a way that's, I don't know. Like, I just wonder, you know, like you're tall, like you're not, like
I'm 5'7".
You're beautiful in a, oh really?
I thought everyone thinks I'm taller.
I thought, Well, you look, you, no, you but have you know supermodel what
it,
looks.
Thank you. You. I think what it is, it's one of those things where everyone can see it, but one person can't kind of thing. Like in a rom-com sort of thing. It's, okay. It's basically
okay.
Like
beautiful, but she doesn't know it. Okay. But anyway, like, I feel like if, like, I feel like you probably had a lot of men throwing themselves at you constantly throughout your lifetime. So maybe when you have a friend where, mm-hmm. you know, like it wasn't as clear cut as like a girl who maybe doesn't get as much, like male attention throughout her life. So they would be more acutely aware of.
Yeah.
Such
well,
a thing.
He literally never did anything. Like he never got creepy with me. Like he really just acted like a friend. He never crossed the line. Yeah. He never told me I was beautiful. He never like got weird. Like he never. So that's why I didn't know. Yeah. But on the outside watching, everyone else could see it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But we did share like a super closeness, and like it was getting towards the end of that like 3-year period where like I remember one time we were hanging at the Sunset Tower, like, and we used to like, you know, we had a podcast together at the time, and we would always go hang out after and like go out to eat, or like we loved like spending time together.
Wait, can I just jump in for 1 second and say, yeah. Is it crazy? Do you now listen to the podcast and be like, oh my God, like, but how weird would that be to listen to like you guys, your dynamic before you were a married couple? Like, that's just so fascinating that you have that, and beautiful that you have all that, like for the generations to come, like this, you have on tape, this
we
thing
had
of like,
them
this
taken
was when
down.
We were just best friends.
We had them taken
really?
Down. Well, it was too crazy of a podcast. It was like a really crazy storytelling podcast. And I think we kind of went a little hard. And so we just like felt like it was a little incriminating. You know,
okay, well, but the point is you have it for yourselves forever.
Well,
that's
what
like,
we do
I
have,
bet when you're like old, yeah. you can like look back at that and be like, oh my God.
Well, what we do have are thousands of photos. We took thousands of like, we always were doing photo shoots and like these little like post photos, and like that we can look back on and say, oh my God, it was there the whole time. And we just didn't
that's
know kind
so
of thing.
So precious.
It is cute. Yeah.
Okay.
So
you were, it was the 3-year mark. You were having your podcast together.
Yes. And we went to the Sunset Tower, and then the guy I was dating picked me up from there, and I felt like really sad about leaving him, and I was having so much fun with him. And then I texted him when I left, I feel like I just left with the wrong guy. And it like, I just started to like, I don't know, it, something started changing. And then basically that guy, we broke up and we both found ourselves single. And a couple months later, cause I ended up like relapsing, kind of having a tough time. And so he waited until I kind of had my shit together again. And then three months later, we were together at the Comedy Store, and he goes, I'm eating your fucking pussy. And I was like, what?
Dreamboat. Love this.
And he was like, I'm eating your fucking. And I was like giggling, you know, there was the energy there, but it hadn't happened yet. Oh, and then he came over to my apartment and we go, let's kiss and see what it's like. And if we like it,
oh my God,
then great. But if not, like no big deal, but let's see what it's like. And it was so cute. We sat across from each other and we're like on the count of three, like literally for us. And we're like 1, 2, 3. And I swear to God, it like you hear this, it felt like fireworks. It was like so much to the point where I go, the kiss was so long. It was like 3 minutes. We just like held each other like with our lips, and literally like it was like sparks were like flying.
Like you felt like a camera doing circles around you.
It was a movie moment. Like there was a fountain in the background, and like I got,
because there's all this like built up sexual tension for so many years. Like even if you weren't super aware of it, it was there bubbling inside of your pussy, like waiting to fucking explode.
It was like, it was insane.
Like, were you immediately like soaking wet during the kiss? Just like,
I was like, I was beside myself, because like there was like magic there. It was like unlike anything I've ever experienced. And I even was like, did you feel that? You know, like so corny. Like
oh
he just
my God. but I love it.
Yes. And it's so funny because looking back, he probably was like, shut up, bitch. Let's just fuck, you know? But I'm like the girl.
I just want to eat your pussy.
And he was incredible at it.
Oh my God.
He's
so romantic.
Okay. One of the first times we hooked up, he ate my pussy 9 times in one day.
Oh my
9 God. Times. 9. I was like, oh, I was just like beside God. Myself, just like exhausted on the couch.
Oh, I love your love.
It was incredible. Yes. So I'm really grateful because, like, to be honest, like my whole life, like I always felt like this, like inner loneliness, you know? And I always just felt like I just wanted to find my person and like my other match and this person to like go in the world with. And, you know, from such a young age, I just felt very like no one understood me. And I feel like he's the first guy who like loves me for me. He accepts me for who I am. Like, I feel like so just like loved and cared for. And I'm just so grateful that like I found that, because it kind of like you check that box and you're like, okay, now what else, you know? Like,
that's
now
amazing.
what else can I like focus on, you know?
Yeah.
Do you have that?
That's incredible. Yes, I did. I will say, like, I'm a serial monogamous, or I was up until Dan, but like I've had a ton of relationships, and with each one, I learned a ton about myself and about my priorities. And like, I don't regret any of them because they all led to me being like the person that I was at age 30 when I met Dan. And I feel the same for all of his past relationships, where like we each kind of learned so much and realized like, okay, what are our real priorities? And then when we did meet, it was like, holy shit, like we just sync up in this way where we're both on the same page. And we both had issues that we were like aware of and ready to work on and be willing to like, let's be a team and partners together and let's like make this work. And we actually started couples therapy before we ever had a problem. Like, because he was so fresh out of a relationship, I was like, let's just go, like, you already have this therapist that was actually like his ex and his couples therapist that then he continued seeing solo. And I was like, you know, to start with a new therapist, like, it's not like we're having any problems. I just have this theory that like, if you go to therapy as a preventative thing, instead of it being like at a crisis moment, then it takes the pressure off. And it just becomes about like, here's an hour each week for however long, where we're building tools to have a successful, effective relationship, because no relationship is perfect. Every relationship is going to have fights. And it's all about learning how to fight well and how to repair. And so we did this preventative therapy, and it wound up being, I think, what made us like fall in love. I mean, we were already in love, but what like secured our partnership, because it truly made us like the best we can be. And we both have issues, but like now we know how to cater to each other more and how to like be, you know, the best partner that we can to one another. And like just little like tricks of like, okay, if you're both drunk and you start a fight, like, you know, having that fight is just going, like, there is no point. So if you're both drunk and you have a fight, separate, go to different rooms. And in the morning, if you still feel that way, you'll talk it out. But like 9 times out of 10, it was just like a drunken thing. And in the morning, we're like, I love you. I'm sorry. I love you, baby. You know, it's like,
yeah,
just things that we've learned. And so I really like, whenever I have friends that have just gotten into a new relationship and have the means, because obviously it is a luxury to be able to afford mental health, which should not be the case. But if you have the means and you're in a new relationship, to just make it like a fun thing instead of like, oh, we're at a crisis and now we got to find a therapist, tell them the backstory of everything and blah, blah, blah. Now it's like, we went in the beginning and now we only go when we have like an issue. Or for example, when we were moving into a new house together, it was like, okay, we've been basically living together, but not officially. It's just been like, I've been sleeping over his old house every night. Now that we're officially moving in together, let's do a couple sessions of therapy to like just talk about what this new arrangement is going to be like, and what are the things we need to look out for, and what are the things that we are excited for, and you know, just talking about the things before they become issues.
Yeah, we went today.
Really advocate for that.
Yeah, I love couples therapy.
And did you start going initially because of a problem, and then you just found someone that you liked and went from there?
You know, we communicate differently. So like when there is an issue, like I think we just like hear, you know, like you can hear things differently.
Yeah.
So I feel like we have some of that. And I think I'm trying to remember. I think we went because of an issue. It's really, I can't remember, but I feel like we've been doing it for maybe a year or two. And we've been together for 4, and it is great.
Do you still do every week?
No, we do when there's like a problem.
Yeah.
So we did it like today because there was like something so when we like disagree on something and we're not really like finding a solution, I'm like, let's do a session so we can like talk it out with a third person who can give us so like helpful. An object. Yeah, it really is. And
so helpful. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And like one of the tools that we learned too is really like taking that space when you guys are fighting mm-hmm. and like not seeing in each other's face. And like, that could be hard to remember, but like we make like a code word up where we just do like a timeout and like say a word that like, you know, so like stuff like that has been really helpful. And like, you know, me just listening and not interrupting him and giving him space when he needs it. So like you guys moved into a house, which is great. Like, has that been like amazing, like spatially for you? Because, you know, especially during this time. Yeah.
It's been amazing. My relationship for most of my 20s, I was in like a 7-year relationship with someone, and I moved in eventually to his house that he owned and had been living in for, you know, a decade plus. And I learned through that experience that like, I'll never do that again. Like, I'll never move into somebody's existing home because it will never feel like my home regardless. Yes. Like, it will never, like every time we had a fight, I would like leave and sleep in my car. Like, I would just be like,
did you sleep in your car before?
I slept in my car. Like, it would wind up being like not the whole night. It'd be a few hours, and then I get uncomfortable and be like, okay, I'm back. But the instinct was there to like leave. Mm-hmm. It never felt like my house. Now, so with Dan, I was always like, even though he had this nice house that was cool, it was just like, from the beginning was like, I'll never like move all my stuff in. I'll always keep my apartment, even though I was there almost every night. So when we decided to move in together, it was like, okay, we're going to buy a house. Unfortunately, I don't make nearly as much money as Dan. So like, he bought the house, he owns the house, but it's our house together. Yeah. And like, he doesn't hold it over my head. Mm-hmm. The fact that he paid for it, it very much feels like our space together. And we're very privileged. It's a big enough house that especially during the pandemic, it's like I have my own, you know, office. He has his own office, like that we have plenty, and there's a guest room. Like, there's plenty of spaces to go if and when we need space from each other.
Yeah.
But it's honestly, knock on wood, been like such an amazing, everything has been incredible. Like, we blended our families. Like, I had a dog and he had 2 dogs. And so now it's all the dogs. And now we just have this pack, our little family pack. And like, we go on our nightly walks with the dogs. And it's just been like a very, like, I never, my whole life, from the age of 8, when my parents split up, I never had like one home. Like, I was always going either between my dad's house and my mom's house. Or then when I grew up, it would be like my house, my apartment, and my lover's or whatever partner's place. I always was like living out of my car. Like, I had stuff everywhere, and like pills, like my birth control. I had to keep everything like in my purse because I was like, I'll never know where I'm going to sleep. And so that feeling of like not being rooted in one place, I think really like took a toll on me that I was totally unaware of, because it was just my existence. It's what I did. And so now having like my one house, that's where I live, and like, just my routines have changed. Like, I'm more habitual. I have like my routines now, whereas before I was just sort of like all over the place. Now I'm like, okay, I feed the dogs every morning. I do everything. Like, I do all these things that make me feel, you know, I'm a creature of habit, and it feels very, very comfortable and nice.
Do you have a daily routine for self-care, or even for like work or writing? Like,
I will say no. Like, I am pretty shitty at like self-motivating. So unless I'm like, especially this whole year has just been a mess for me in terms of like writing and being accountable to myself, which I think probably so many people are dealing with right now in the pandemic. But I do try to, like, the one thing that I, before the pandemic, I would do yoga. I go to a yoga studio and do yoga. Not often, but like I would try to at least do once a week. Sometimes if I was really good, I'd go like 3-4 times a week. And that was a thing that I knew, like, I, even though I hate working out, once I'm done doing it, I feel so much better. And I knew that about myself. And then when the pandemic hit, I couldn't go to the yoga studio anymore. So at first I was like, all right, I'm gonna do yoga videos, whatever. And I started doing, trying to do those, but I am just so undisciplined that, like, if I'm not in a class being held accountable, I'll just wind up like doing a half of a workout and being like, okay, I'm bored, I'm gonna go do something else. So I discovered that for me, what I need to do to be active is have like very specific short little bursts of workout. So I started doing planking. I started with just like,
oh my God, I hate planks.
So now I love planks. So I started with 2-minute planks and then I went to 3. And now on a good day, but it's not every day, but on a good day, I'll do 5 3-minute planks.
What?
Five 3-minute planks. So I was
getting, and do you drop your hips? Do you really drop your hips?
No, I really hold it. I really do it. And
but so, you're like in the proper form. What?
Oh yeah, no. I keep my hips. Yeah, like I do a proper fucking plank.
Wow.
And I can hold
that's
it for 3 minutes.
This
and
is the most thing, impressive thing so far on the podcast, by the way.
Well,
for
one
me.
Thing that really, one thing that really helped was I was doing like Instagram lives. And I started a thing called talk in the plank, like instead of walk in the plank, talk in the plank with Cody Heller. And what I would do is to motivate me, and it really fucking helped, was I would do all the planks in a row, and I would have Instagram live. I would have people, random strangers join me and plank with me and talk to me. So I would wind up meeting an amazing person with an amazing story, and we'd be planking, and I would ask them questions about their lives. And it became this thing that was just like really fucking cool. And I loved, and I'm gonna go back to it eventually, but I've still been keeping up with the planks. But then once I was planking so much, I was like, okay, I think what I've always wanted to be able to do, like pull-ups, pull-ups, whatever.
You're very
and
good.
So I was like, Well, thank you. I because I had been planking so much, I was like, this is gonna be no problem. I like had Dan, at first I like installed one in the door, and then I fucking fell on my ass. It was on my Instagram. And then also it got picked up by Girls Getting Hurt, the Instagram
oh my God.
Thing, because I fell really hard on my ass. But the point is, when I first started trying to do the chin-ups, I couldn't do one. Like, even though I've been planking so much and thought my upper body was so strong, could not do one. And I was like, I am going, this was like the most motivated I've been in my life. I was like, I'm going to learn how to do a fucking chin up before the vaccine. And this was like months ago. This was like, I can't remember what month, maybe August, September. So I started researching and doing like reverse, basically like you start at the top and then slowly lower yourself down. So you start building up the strength. And now I can do I can do 10 in a row, but they're not perfect. I can do 5 like perfect ones. And then I'll try to do that, like on a good day, I'll do that like 3 times or something.
That's fucking hard though.
3 sets of 5. And it is now, but once you hit, it's like, it's like learning how to ride a bike where like suddenly it clicks and you are like, oh shit, I can do it. But it is fucking hard. It's so hard, but it felt like such an accomplishment when I finally was able to like go from the very bottom all the way up.
Yeah.
So I've been doing that. And then my other workout is I bought Suzanne Summers Thighmaster. And the Thighmaster, I swear to God, it's amazing. I'm not joking. I've gotten so many of my friends have since bought it because it fucking works. It's so good. The one I
inner?
Bought one that comes with two. It comes with the inner and the outer. So I do 3
that.
Minutes of inner and 3 minutes of outer. If you just Google Suzanne Summers Thighmaster, you get the one that has the gold and the LBX. And there's like a bunch of different workouts. You can do arm stuff, you can do chest, you can do all different kind of things. But I usually just do like 3 minutes inner, 3 minutes outer. And I swear it is, because I've never, like, I've always just done yoga, which, like, you know, like I did yoga with weight. So it's like yoga sculpts or whatever. So it was kind of that same idea. But like the idea of actually doing something where you're mm-hmm. really focused, like spot training yeah. on the specific muscles, has made a huge difference. I love the Thighmaster. They're like, it's been around. It was available on Amazon, but it's since sold out. But when I bought it on Amazon, I was reading the reviews. It's like thousands of five-star reviews of like people being like, there's a reason this thing has been around for 30 plus years. Like it actually 40 years, however long, like it fucking works. It's
wow.
amazing.
I highly
recommend it.
Yeah, because I've
I think it's like $55 for two of them.
Because I noticed that area just over the past, you know, since I've been home, like, yeah. I'm like, oh, I need to like tone my inner thighs. I never like noticed that before. I think it's because I gained a little
weight. It makes such a difference.
Yeah, I'm excited. Oh my God.
It's so good. I love it. I'm obsessed. And you just do it, like, I'll do it. I bought like this little sand hourglass timer yeah. for my planking, like a 3-minute timer. And I just use that. And I'm just like, I can like be watching TV or doing something mm-hmm. else while I'm doing it. It's like, you just fucking do it and it's great. And even though I've been doing it for a while, it's still, every time I do it, I'm still like, oh,
yeah,
like, it still is an intense workout.
I love that. I'm excited. Can I ask you like a couple of writing questions and then I'll let you go?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So question, because this is something that I struggle with. So I'm just curious how you handle it. When you're in between a project, say there's something finished or there's something out there you're waiting to get notes on. Two-part question. One, do you get like anxious, or like if you're trying to start a new writing project and you don't know quite what you want to do and you're in that in-between space, like do you feel anxious, lost, like what kind
yes.
does that okay, because like that sometimes, like
yes, I'm in the middle of that right now, and yeah. It is so shitty to find out mm-hmm. that like that's just the way it is, like
yeah.
Dan, who has way more experience and success than me, like he still, it, mm-hmm. like the fraud complex, all that stuff, like never goes away.
Mm-hmm.
It's like such a bummer. Like I hate writing. I hate it. I hate it. And there's like this Dorothy Parker quote that's like, I hate writing. I love having written. And that mm-hmm. is it. Like I love coming up with ideas and I get excited when I come up with an idea and I'm like, oh my God, I'm so excited about this idea. Mm-hmm. And like, I start thinking about it and brainstorming. And then when it comes time to like actually do it, if I don't have a deadline, if it's just me coming up mm-hmm. with something on spec, I am such a piece of shit with follow through. Like I am so, so terrible at it. And I used to have a writing partner for years. Mm-hmm. Like my whole first part of my career, I had a writing partner, and that helped so much because it was built in accountability. It was like, you have to show up and work that day. And with writing solo right now, it's like, if I'm not working on a show or mm-hmm. working on a show that I've already sold and have real deadlines and have to do it, it's just like, I just won't do the work. I just fucking, it's the worst sort of mm-hmm. procrastination, because it's like the guilt that I feel is so overwhelming that what I wind up doing is like sleeping and doing mm-hmm. like just sleeping for a whole day, because I'm like, well, if I wake up, I should really write and I really don't want to write. So I'm just going to like take a Benadryl and go to sleep. And it's like
yeah.
a terrible, mm-hmm. awful, it's the worst. So, I mean, the best advice that I ever got was from Dan. Best advice about writing was when I was working on writing Dummy. Mm-hmm. It was before I was writing Dummy. I was working on another script. And this was like right after my writing partner and I had parted ways. And so it was, I had to write a new spec script, you know, for my agents to mm-hmm. use as my sample to get like staffing jobs. And so I was working on this one pilot and I was working on it for months, but like, I wasn't working on it. I was just yeah. like going to a coffee shop and sitting there and being like, okay. And like not making mm-hmm. any progress. And Dan finally was like, you are stuck on this thing. You need to move on, write something else. And write the worst thing, challenge yourself to write something bad, write the worst, a sarcastic script, like something that is so bad that like, but just write it, get it out, write, like figure out your outline and write the 30 pages. And what came of that was me writing Dummy. And wow. it was like, part of it was like, fuck you, Dan, because I was mad at him and he had a sex doll. And that was partly on my mind of like, I was just like, you know, so it all kind of converged in this moment of me just being like, fuck it, I'm just gonna write this fucking dumb thing that I'll never show anyone. And then like I wrote it and I was like, wait, I actually kind of like this. And then I rewrote it and rewrote it and rewrote it. And mm-hmm. But really truly, writing is rewriting, like they say. So it's like you just have to get that first shitty, what they call a spit draft out. Mm-hmm. And like, once you do that, it's so much easier than the blank page. Mm-hmm. So truly the best advice, which like now saying it out loud, I'm like, no, tomorrow I'm going to start working on my thing that I've been trying to work on for months and like have just been avoiding. It's like, I'm just going to write the bad version tomorrow and see what happens. I'm going to write the bad version of the outline and just see, because truly that's the only way, you know, fear is the biggest thing, is like the fear of not being good. And so you sit down to write and it's not going to be good at first. So that fear is so prohibitive and like keeps you locked in this space of like, you know, I think it's Ira Glass who said like, when you're an artist starting out, your talent is down here, but your taste is up here because you've been watching and seeing reading all these things that you love. So like, you're down here and you want to be up here. So that fear gap of like not being as good as you want to be because of all the great stuff you've seen or read is the thing blocking you from being good, because along the way you have to fail a million times and write a million shitty drafts before you write anything good, because it's all about just like output and learning through doing and writing. Like real writers, you have to write. And for so long, and right now I'm not writing. I'm just like, I am a writer by trade. Mm-hmm. Like I am writing something that I like got paid to write, that I'm, you know, on a draft of right now. So that's one thing. But like, as for this new thing that I'm developing and trying to work on, I'm just like being the biggest piece of shit ever. And just, it's worse and I hate it. And I fucking hate it. But then when I get into it and it's finally like consuming all my thoughts and everything I look at reminds me of it, you get into that zone. Incredible. Eventually, but it's getting there is a really fucking shitty hill that has a bunch of like diarrhea falling down the hill that you have to like grab your way through it. And yeah.
Something that I noticed for myself is that I'll get like super excited about a new idea and I'll work on it for a couple of days and then I'll like take a day or two off. And the second I lose steam or excitement, I don't care about the idea anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's the main thing is just to do the follow through. Like even, and like I said, it's like doing that shitty draft, doing that thing that like you know is shitty, literally to the point where like, if you're working on a scene and you're like, one character says like, what are we even doing in this scene? And the other character is like, I don't know, but I guess we'll figure it out on the next draft. Maybe we're supposed to be talking about something about what just happened in that last scene. Yeah, you're right. We should totally talk about that. Like literally, if you just write that, you at least then start having, you know, of course you need an outline first so that you know where the story is kind of going, but you just need those fillers. And then each draft you figure it out and get better and better. But like writing is fucking rewriting and it sucks, but you have to just get that one shitty draft out on the page. And then you're already like so far ahead.
When you're in it and you're working on something, like if you have a deadline, what's your process for working? Is it something you're showing up to every day? Do you have specific times, places that you like to write?
I mean, it really depends, because up until the pandemic, like I was working as a TV writer, which typically means like you're in a writer's room. And that experience is like heaven, because you are with a bunch of people all day talking about story, talking about characters, joking around. There's like a social aspect of it. There's a brainstorming aspect that you don't get when you're writing alone. Like you just, someone will say something and that will spark something in you and that will spark something in someone else. And like, you just come up with things that you would never come up with when you're all alone. So I do find when I'm now writing something on my own, I do kind of have to pace and talk to myself out loud. And that's part of what like inspired Dummy a little bit, of just the idea of like creating, like making Dan's sex doll this writing partner, basically, where I was like, I'm just gonna make her like a character and talk to her, which is basically me talking to myself on the page. But like a writer's room with other writers is truly my heaven. That is the most fun job in the world, because you're literally just like, half the day you're just laughing at shit and just like making jokes, and then you're building stories and you're talking about characters and you're talking about your own lives and using anecdotes from your own experiences to be like, well, I don't know if this will lead to anything, but something similar happened to me when I was a kid and this, that, and that. And someone will say, oh my God, that'd be great. What if Jim Carrey's character were doing that? And like, you just build upon each other's, it's this like and it's like an orgasm when you like mm-hmm. finally get like all the pieces to a story figured out and everything clicks into place. It's such an incredible feeling and I truly love it and I miss that. And I haven't been in a Zoom writer's room, a writer's Zoom as they're calling mm-hmm. them, but a bunch of my friends have, and they do say that it is different because there is something about being in person together and just like the micro little gestures that, and also like little like catty mean girl things of like, you know, there's certain, you establish a certain dynamic with the group that you're in and you have your really close friends. And then you have your friends, the people that you're like, when you like elbow your friend under the table, when they pitch something bad, like there is a bit of that. And it's not so much that it's evil, but it's like, part of that is what makes the room a fun room. And then like you take bathroom breaks or go to the kitchen at the same time as your friend and go like, oh my God, remember so-and-so's pitch? Like what a fucking loser. Like there is an element of that that keeps it really fun. Cause it's like, it feels like you're at summer camp. It feels like you're at summer camp all day working on like a project together and you all have a common goal. And depending on your role, like if it's, you know, my show versus if I'm a co-executive producer on someone else's show where like I'm higher level, I have responsibilities, but at the end of the day, I am there in service of the showrunner's vision, the creator's vision. And like, you cannot take stuff personally. So if you pitch something and they don't like it, you cannot continue to pitch. You need to pivot and be like, respect that it's their show. And that's a very different role than like when it's your show and you're the visionary at the head of it where everyone else is trying to help you. And both roles I really enjoy in different ways. And like, there's something very freeing about just being on the staff of someone else's show where the burden is off of you, like it, in a way where it's like, well, if it sucks, it's not my fault. That can lead to like even better work sometimes because you're just like, look, I'm just like giving you my, like I'm being of service, you know?
When you did Dummy, and correct me if I'm wrong, but is that the show, the only show so far that you yourself has been, in charge of like completely?
Dummy was different because I didn't have a writer's room really. Okay. So Dummy, I just basically wrote on my own, except when it was originally set up at TBS, because it went through a whole different, a million stages, but it was set up at TBS at one point. And I have a friend, Eli Journay, who's an amazing writer. We worked together on Wilfred and I hired him as like a consulting producer. So he helped me sort of like shape the season, but I wrote all the episodes and then I rewrote them again when it went to Quibi. But that in a way I was like bummed out to not have a writer's room because I really wanted one. But at the end of the day, I'm really happy I didn't because it truly is just like something that's just completely from my brain. And I think that for that, it worked well. But I had a show called Deadbeat that was on Hulu. And that was when I had my writing partner. So that was the two of us, but it was our first show. So we were not technically the showrunners. We had like a showrunner assigned to us that we worked with. So we were the creators and the executive producers, but we weren't truly in charge, but like, we had a lot of say. So it was kind of like blurred line situation, but no, Dummy was my first time where it was just my show. I was the showrunner. It was literally, you know, every single, while we were in production and post-production, every single thing, it came down to my choice, which was like the first time I was doing it. And it was really scary at first before it started. And then as soon as it started, I was like, oh my God, I feel very natural in this role. It was a really empowering moment of me being like, I've been so submissive and I've always questioned and doubted myself my whole life. And like, when I just trust my instincts, like I do know what I'm doing. I kind of do know, and I make mistakes all the time and I need other people to weigh in and all those things, of course, but there is like a natural leader in me that kind of came out and felt so good. And the 18 days, we shot the whole show in 18 days. And those 18 days, like, literally were the best 18 days of my life. Like I woke up every morning driving to set, like listening to music, rocking out, being like, I feel like I'm in the movie of my life where I finally have discovered the thing that I'm great at. And it was so, so fulfilling. And it's just like, then you have these high highs and then these low lows where it's like, now I haven't made anything in so long because of COVID and all these things and I miss it. But like now I'm filled with self-doubt again. And all, you know, it's just constant. There's never stability in our business. There's never, It's not like, it's unlike any other job where it's like, oh, if you stay at it by a certain point, you get promoted and then you're this and you're, it's, there's never that stability. You could be canceled at any moment. You could be irrelevant. You could write something shitty. You could just not be productive. There are so many pitfalls and like ways for you to fuck yourself over. But the high highs are really great. So,
yeah. So how do you deal with those low lows? Like, what are your go-tos? Do you have any specific kind of self-care stuff you
like
to do?
I don't have anything that I would say is like healthy. They're all unhealthy. It's like drugs and alcohol, really, truly, like it's bad. It's me escaping. It's me sleeping. It's like, it's shitty stuff like that. But I will say, now that I've added my sort of workout routine into my life, that has been something where like, it definitely lifts my mood right away. So I know that I have that to like fall back on. But a lot of times it just comes from like me getting excited enough about an idea to like talk to a friend about it and be like, you know, just talking to a friend about it will then get me more excited. And that can often be like the key to unlock that feeling of being stuck and miserable.
Yeah. And that was going to be my next question. When you are developing a new idea or figuring out the next thing that you want to write, what is your process look like for that? Like, how do you narrow it down? Is there anything you specifically do? Do you wait for something to come to you? Are you like brainstorming list of log lines and choosing the one you like the most? Like, what does that look like?
It kind of depends. Like, my most recent example I'll give is that like at the beginning of the pandemic, I was like, you know what? I was looking at Dan, who does like Rick and Morty, and so he has some other animated shows in development. And I was realizing that like he, through the pandemic, nothing has changed. He can do everything over Zoom, like because it's an animated show, they don't have to shoot it live. Like everything can be done, you know, over Zoom. So his work life was not affected. So I was like, I want to write an animated show. And I've also always been interested in doing an adult animated show anyway. So I was like, okay, I know I want to write an animated show. And then I built from there of like, well, I want there to be a reason that it's animated. I don't want it to just be like a family show, but it's animated. I want it to, there to be most of the stuff I write does have some sort of high concept or supernatural element to it anyway. So I was like, what is that for this? And the other thing I was thinking a lot about with animation was like, I was realizing how few female run created animated shows exist. There are so few. There's like Steven Universe. There's like Daria was co-created by a woman, Tuca and Birdie, but like there are very few. And I was just like, that's so interesting. So much of adult animation and children's animation is created by men. And so I was like, one thing that I really wanted to do was make sure that what I was creating looked different, because I feel like I wanted to create something that looked like a woman. I wanted drawn by a woman. I can't draw, so it wasn't gonna be me, but like, I wanted it to look so beautiful that a woman our age would be like, I want a still of that as a poster on my wall, not because I'm a fan of the show, but because it's like art. Like, I wanted to create something so beautiful. So I went to my friend Sophia, who's the one whose husband took her last name. She's one of my best friends. She's an extremely talented director, creator, but she also has a lot of experience in animation. So I was like, let's work on this together. And so that became an exciting thing of like, I'm going to write it. She's going to direct it. But so it became this bigger thing that was bigger than me, and that helped me. I mean, this is all me saying this, even though I haven't really started writing it, but it's in the developmental stage right now of big ideas, brainstorming, figuring out the world, figuring out the characters, figuring out what I'm saying with it, all of those things. But having Sophia as this person where we can, you know, trade ideas about the look and how to create things a special way, and like pulling reference images, that has been exciting because I've never done animation before. And it's been like a new exciting thing. And with Dummy, you know, her face, the sex doll's face, a lot of that was all created in post based on the actress's performance. So I did have some experience in like some sort of animation. So now I'm excited to actually try to tackle an all animated show.
That's cool. Yeah, I remember seeing the behind the scenes, like, pictures of Meredith with, like, the stickers all over her face.
Yeah.
And then seeing the out, then seeing what came of it. And I was like, oh my God. Like, I don't know. I guess I just didn't really know what it was. It was really cool. Really cool. Yeah.
Thanks. It was a process. My one regret about the show is that it, you know, we did as much as we could to get the effects that where they are, and I'm happy enough with them, but we really didn't have enough time to do proper R&D because, like, schedule wise, we just had to start shooting. So the methodology we thought we were going to employ didn't wind up working. So Meredith's performance was just so incredibly nuanced and so fucking funny that, like, there are certain moments that I miss that, like, could not translate to the CG in the way that I wanted them to. And those are the moments that I noticed. No one else notices it, but, like, if I showed you the version, because when I edited it originally, I just did it with her face and then we did the effects. So it was a learning process for me of, like, oh, wow, how the little things in, you know, eyebrows and learning, like, what facial movements communicate things best and comedically how it works. And I learned a shit ton about that.
That's cool. Yeah. Cool. I love both actresses. It's so cool that you had both of them. Like, was that exciting? Like, when you found out, like, Anna Kendrick and Meredith Hanger, is that you say your last name?
Hagner. Yeah.
Hagner. I mean, like, was that, like, super exciting? Like, of course, like, the process of, like, getting your own show is cool, but, like, seeing every element come together and then, like, having, like, super funny comedic actresses in, like, I imagine that's it was so awesome.
It was exciting. It was truly amazing. I am not exaggerating. The cast and the crew was literally, like, everyone was amazing. Like, I tried to hire as many women as possible. Mm-hmm. So we had, like, a female director, DP, production designer, almost all the heads of every department were women. And it was the most fun, incredible group of people that just, like, we were laughing all day because we're making a show about a sex doll. There's, like, anuses, like, on set all day. There's, like, fake vaginas. Like, we were just laughing the whole time through. And Anna and Meredith have both become, like, real life, like, forever friends. Like, they were just incredible. Anna was so, like, not, she was just, her technical abilities as an actress were so impressive. Like, I just was kind of blown away by watching the way she worked. And then just her, she was an executive producer on it as well. And our instincts just aligned so perfectly, which is, like, you never know. I didn't know her well before. Like, I had a meeting with her. She liked the scripts. We agreed to do it. And then it's like, we met one more time. We had one rehearsal with everyone. And then we started shooting. And, like, it was just incredible because we would always, like, after they would call cut, we would both, like, kind of powwow, and we would always just be like, I would about to say a note, or she was about to say a note, and we both, like, say the same thing. It was just, we were always in sync, which is just so lucky. Amazing. And rare.
Yeah.
And then Meredith just came in, and, like, I mean, I originally imagined Barbara a certain way, and then Meredith came in and auditioned, and she did it so different than how I imagined, and so much funnier, that I went back and rewrote a lot of her dialogue.
That's so cool.
Her voice, because she was just so, she just, I was like, oh my God, that's Barbara. That's who she is. And she was amazing. And we just had, like, I love them dearly. They're incredible and just fiercely talented, hilarious women.
I love that.
So yeah, it was really cool. It was really, really cool.
I love that. Okay. And then just to finish, I'm going to throw out, like, three words and just speak on them as you will, wherever it takes you. Motivation, drive. Well, I guess it's, and following your instincts and gut, like, whatever comes up for that with you in terms of work and life, like, just take it into whatever direction you want to.
Motivation, drive, and following your instincts.
Yeah. I know that's so random, but just after what we spoke about, I'm curious to how.
No, it's good. It's actually, it's literally, like, what I need to be telling myself right now, which is, like, which is, like, stop the fear, like try to outrun the fear by just diving in and doing the bad version. Like, just do the work, even if it's bad at first. Like, just start working and go and open up a fucking final draft file and say, I'm gonna write an outline. I'm gonna figure out what this story is today. And I'm gonna just figure it out. And like, I'm capable and I've done it before. And even though it feels like every time I'm starting over, like I have no knowledge of all the experiences before, it feels like that, it is there. And trust your instinct and like, just fucking do it. And if it's bad, you can make it better later. And like, it's better than not starting at all. But yeah, I really need to take my own advice on this because it's fucking, it's hard.
It is hard.
It's really hard.
Well, thank you so much for coming.
How was I as a podcast guest? Really?
You are.
Give me some notes.
Okay.
Give me notes.
Well, what's great is that you fully answer questions and you can take it off into your own. And, you know, I would say actors are hard to interview because they are very like short winded with like their answers, and they'll be like,
because they're like aware, they're aware of like their social, like their public image and like keeping
yes. So it was great that you were open and comfortable and I liked, it was great. I really,
so you have no, it. you have no bad notes. You have no notes of like,
no, I have no notes. No. No.
My God. So I got like an A. I got like an A plus.
Yeah. And you found your light. Like all around it was an A.
Oh yeah. I mean, I wish I had found my light. I know.
But it's not like practical to hold the computer.
It's not practical. And then, look at the shadow.
But you should take a selfie in that spot.
I had such a great time, Chelsea.
Thank you.
I'm such a big fan of you and your life. And Jagger is fucking adorable.
Thank you.
That's his name,
thank
right?
You. Yeah, Jagger. Yeah.
And when the pandemic is over, I would love to come over and have you cook one of your delicious meals for me.
I love your
home cooked meals. They look amazing.
Thank you. Yeah, let's do it up. Good All to right. see you. Bye.
All right. It was so much fun.
So much fun. Bye. Thank you. Bye.